This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the fishy voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
Traumatising. Traumatising event has happened.
So, you've given me the foundations of a story here. You've given me the scene. The main scene is what you've given me, the headline. But the moment you told me, you gave me one little titbit, I was like, I don't want to hear any more. So you told me this, what, about 10 days ago?
Must have been, because you did the pod with Asmir last week. So didn't get a chance to offload and tell you what happened. And, you know, I was hoping for a bit of a counselling session, if I'm honest, and we haven't had the opportunity to do so.
So I said, no, I don't want to hear it. I want to hear this for the first time on the podcast with our listeners. So please, Richard Lee, take it away.
It's difficult to talk about, but I will talk about it. So I was at the beach, had a lovely day at the beach and swimming in the sea, you know, feeling free. It's quite nice, you know, swimming in the sea and really enjoying it. And as you can imagine, there's certain like lots of fish that come and go and they don't really hang around, do they, fish? You kind of get near them and they swim away. But there was this one fish. It was, I can only say it was fascinating. It was fascinated with me. And so we were looking at each other for a while and it started getting closer and closer. And it must have been for about 15, 20 minutes. And then it was getting really, really close. So I was then getting closer to the water. The fish starts kissing me. Like genuinely, this little fish, I swear to God, this little, we were looking at each other's eyes. And you know, you have that moment. Well, firstly, I thought, I'm Dr. Doolittle. That's what I thought. I thought, I am Ace Ventura. This fish absolutely loves me. And we were just there. And then I was thinking, genuinely, I was thinking, what do? I can't leave this fish now. Like, we're best mates. You know, we built this bond. So I was thinking, do I build an aquarium at home? Like, what can I possibly do with this gorgeous little fish? So anyway, we're there. We're kissing away, kissing away. Then it was this weird moment where all of a sudden, it might have been a he, it might have been a she, I don't know with fish, but it's looked at me. And at this point, if you can imagine, my head is very close to the water because we were like giving each other little kisses. It jumps out the water and bites me on the nose. Right. And my nose at this point now, obviously I then instantly lost any connection I had with that fish, but my nose was then like gushing with blood. So the blood's dripping in the water. So I've then had to go and seek medical attention because I didn't know, for a start, I didn't know fish had teeth. Like, that sounds so ridiculous. I didn't know they had teeth. This poor fish, not poor fish actually, but this fish, like we'd built this connection and just out of nowhere it attacked me, jumped out of the water. I mean, I spoke to a couple of guys about this. They questioned whether I was kissing a piranha. I don't think I was, but it was this.
No, a piranha would have eaten your head off.
No, that's true. It was only about, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 inches. It wasn't like a big fish. And yeah, jumped and bit me on the nose.
When you say that the fish was kissing you and you were kissing, I mean, what are we talking here? Are we talking lip to lip? Are we talking pecs?
It was so cute. I mean, in hindsight, I was probably quite lucky that it was my nose and not my eye or something because, yeah, we were like, it was just really weird. It wouldn't leave me alone. And it was, like I say, most fish, not that I'm a fish expert by any means, but whenever I've gone up to a fish, it's normally swum away, but this one just wouldn't. Like, it was really, yeah, it was swimming around me, and then, like I say, as I was getting close to the water, it was coming right up to my face, and I could look right into its eyes. It was like one of the most bizarre experiences, and that's, I think, where I was like mesmerized. But look, in hindsight, all he was doing was just reeling me in. It was the complete opposite to what normally happens in fishing. He's reeled me right in before jumping and grabbing my nose.
Were you scared at any point here?
Not initially, because I thought, again, I do feel like I've got a connection with animals. I mean, you've seen me with the dogs. You know, I do feel like animals do tend to... A fish is an animal, isn't it? I always feel like it might be different because it's a fish.
Well, you can call it an animal.
Yeah, okay. So I kind of feel like maybe I've just got this connection with animals. So I was at that point, I was probably having myself a little bit, just thinking like, okay, this could be my next calling after goalkeeping. You know, I could do something regarding animals, you know. But, and it was that scenario. I was right by the water and it was like, so the fish, if you can imagine, was essentially out of the water. Like it was on top of the water. Yeah, giving me little kisses. It was the most amazing thing for about 20 minutes. And I'd have stayed there all day. It was like fascinating to me.
It's got this vision of you crouched down in the water.
And I was.
Kissing away this little fish. And then it...
Just jump. Honestly, so was I scared at any point? The only moment I was scared is when it's obviously bitten me and had a moment of anger, and I kind of like it's kind of like that one. I'll try and bring this back to goalkeeping somehow, but you know, you let in a bad goal and you kick the post. It was kind of like that. I instantly kind of like splashed the fish, you know, in anger, and then walked out the pool. That was the only bit I was worried, because I could see the blood pouring out, and I was like, oh, what's he done to my nose? And then I was, and actually, you know, once it all settled down and the paramedic came, and at first they were like, oh, what have you been bitten by? Like, was it an insect? Was it? It's like, no, it was a fish. Like, that's not possible. It's like, well, it was. It happened. I saw it. But once it settled down, the injury actually wasn't too bad. But at first, I was actually quite concerned, because quite a lot of blood was coming from my nose. Mm.
No poison, nothing like that.
Well, that was it, instantly, I was like, they got me the antiseptic and whatever else. So I think I'm okay, thankfully. But yeah, tough. I've had a couple of nightmares since about it. So yeah, definitely traumatizing.
Well, lesson learned.
Which is?
Don't kiss fish.
Don't go in the sea. Avoid the sea at all costs.
Well, there was another story, wasn't there, this week? I don't know whether we should hold that for another day.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a bad story. I don't know if I want to share that. But yeah, maybe we'll save that for next week.
Okay, we'll save that for next week, because that's another beauty.
Yeah, but terrible. Yeah. Terrible. Probably... Well, worse than this, I don't feel so bad. I feel like I was the innocent party in the fish story, whereas this other story, no, I'm definitely the guilty party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guilty party.
Clever. Clever. On that note.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, we are going to start at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Richard, where David Raya made a few decent saves, but one big beauty of a double save. Can we call this a double save late on from Richarlison?
Again, I guess this is the whole question as to how much time has lapsed between the save. We haven't got clarity on this. I mean, I'm calling it a double save. It wasn't an instant double save, but excellent first save. Great first save. I mean, very little reaction time. Moved his feet brilliantly to get across, position himself perfectly, and the speed at which he gets down to his right to get the fingertips on it, puts it on the post. And then it's keeping your head, because we've all been there where you make that great save, you're buzzing, and you've got to stay in state. And I think that's really key. And in this, you see he does. He gets up very quickly, gathers himself, moves his feet well again. And the tip over is a very good save as well. I know the commentators were sort of saying the first one was a better one, which it possibly was. Very different saves. But what I liked about the second one is, yeah, you so often see it where a goalkeeper makes a big save. And in the same way in which you make a mistake and sometimes you can fall out of state for a period of time, you know, he very much was still in tune with the game and his movement was perfect and excellent technique to tip it over.
Last week, Asmir, we'll do our customary awards at the end of the season. We'll go through all four tiers. But Asmir was a bit ahead of the game last week, and he said that David Raya was his goalie of the season.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think that it's just interesting. What I love about David Raya is he breaks the norm to an extent, because, you know, we see, and certainly when, you know, certainly doing what I do now, a lot of the profiles that we get given or asked for, 6'4", 6'5", can do this, can do that. Whereas he doesn't fit the stereotypical profile. So I think he's had to do it the hard way to an extent. He's obviously gone through the leagues now, League One, Championship, showing now for a couple of seasons just what he can do in the Premier League. No doubt he'll be moving on this season. And I mean, there's no better way from his point of view to finish the season as strongly as he is as well. But I just think he's all right. I think he's so sharp. You know, we talk a lot about those extra few inches in height and what difference it makes. And what was the comment? It's a couple of Cadbury's cream eggs or whatever it is.
That was regarding Pickford, yeah.
Pickford, yeah. And it is, when you actually consider it, I think he's about 6'1", I believe. You know, it's, you know, for those extra 2-3 inches that a lot of managers might look for in a goalkeeper. For me, David Raya epitomises everything you would want in a goalkeeper in terms of speed of feet, agility. I mean, positioning on crosses, he's so aggressive, so effective, coming for so many crosses. So although he's arguably the smallest maybe in the Premier League, or certainly like, you know, bottom three in terms of height, he, I believe, once again this season, he's come for more crosses than anyone. Distribution's excellent. I think he's an elite Premier League goalkeeper, and I think we'll be seeing him move to an elite club.
Wolves 1, Everton 1. Dan Bentley, second start for Wolves, looking very assured again.
He did. By the way, I just feel like I need to just make a quick mention. Of course, Brentford are an elite club and they're moving up the tables. Kind of feel like I've just killed my team.
You've
there,
done the so, classic thing.
Yeah.
Clubs like Brentford, they hate that, mate.
They hate that. And they that. Should do. They should do. And I feel bad for saying it. So I'm just going to quickly... can we just edit this, or can we just do a rewind? No, what I'd say is, and what I mean by that, and actually I say that, and yeah, Brighton and Brentford are the two examples at the moment, the best run football clubs in the Premier League by a country mile. However, of course, their salaries being what they are and their structure being what it is, they're never going to get to the levels of the top six. And I think for a lot of players, once you get to that, look, as much as you know, finances only play a small part, of course, if there is that huge contract on the table, the chance of European football, etc., etc., you know, obviously many do want to move on to the top six, effectively. But yes, Dan Bentley.
Do you know what, actually, as a wider discussion here, which we won't dwell on too much, but you've just said there that Brighton and Brentford will never get to the levels of the top six.
No, I think they can.
Oh, you think they can?
They can, but not financially. And I don't think they'd want to. Like, I love how they do it. Whereas, like, so my thinking when it comes to this, and again, background to goalkeeping, is I think where Brighton and Brentford do it was such... what's the word I'm looking for? Well, such a process. You know, every player they bring in, there is such a process that goes behind that. And it's whether it fits the model of the team, the identity that they've got, character references, whatever it might be. Again, certain ages, so that they're bringing in players that they know that have got the best years ahead of them, potentially moving up. That is their model. And again, I think for them to change, they could transition into, you know, one of the clubs that pays a couple of hundred grand a week. Of course they could. And from what I understand, I'm sure their owners have got enough money to do that. But I think they're very wary because they are moving forward at such pace. I mean, look, we were talking about it yesterday when we were watching the Brighton game. For me, Brighton should have been top four this season, the way that they played. Like, you know, you could argue that pound for pound, they've been better than Man United this season. Of course, with a couple of bad runs during the season and a few things not going their way. So no, I think they absolutely should stick to their model and they can make top four. Wouldn't surprise me if one of them does it next season.
Okay. Mr. Bentley.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And then a bit of a frustrating end, obviously, with the last-minute equaliser. But it was interesting because I thought Everton, a horrible game for a goalkeeper to play in. Everything was put in on the goalkeeper, which we see a lot from Sean Dyche teams. And never particularly nice for a goalkeeper to play against that. But no, he's coming for crosses all day, a couple of good punches, a few good claims, long throws. I always used to struggle with them. Long throws, trying to read the flight of a long throw, but came a couple of times. Really good one-on-one save. A bit of a frustrating end. It was literally the last ball delivered into the box. Wasn't quite able to get a fist on it. And this is, again, the life of a goalkeeper. You know, it's probably a centimetre or two away from getting a decent fist on it and it's game over. But yeah, unfortunately, the ball then broke and ended up in the back of the net. But once again, look, two games in, I guess it's one of them that if you were to, you know, your Premier League debut, you play your first couple of games, you'd certainly take it. And again, look, really assured distribution, good all day. And it's nice, again, we touch on this a lot, but I like the fact that Jason Steele, Dan Bentley, the goalkeepers that have played in the Championship and just showing that maybe the jump isn't quite what a lot of people think it is. You know, you don't always need to go into Europe or rest of the world to find your number one. They could be sitting in the Championship.
Yeah, who knew? An English goalkeeper in the Championship. Who knew that he might be able to play in the Premier League?
It's one for me, and it's so funny when you look back over the years and the amount that have stepped up. You know, Jack Butland several years ago, Neil Etheridge a few years ago. Like the amount that step up. Sam Johnson, of course, when he stepped up for West Brom. Like the amount that do step up and do really well. More often than not, they do well, and not, you know, they're not so well. So I think, really, by now, it should be getting to that point where we do start to see the elite goalkeepers in the Championship making the jumpers number ones. But for the life of me, other than Sam Johnson and Aaron Ramsdale, which is a bit different because they both have played full Premier League seasons, and even Sam Johnson hasn't signed as a number one initially. It's very rare that you see a Premier League club sign a Championship goalkeeper as a number one that hasn't played Premier League football. And I think it's just a mentality, really, because, again, none of the European lads have played Premier League football, but they might have played in the Bundesliga, Serie A, or wherever it might be. But that is considered to be that much more than the Championship. And I do think for a goalkeeper, the Championship is harder than a lot of these leagues as well. Bear in mind, I made this point a lot, but goalkeepers that are coming from a warmer climate, you know, if you're playing in Spain, you might be doing brilliantly in the Liga. Suddenly you're coming to England, weather conditions are nowhere near as favourable as they are in Spain. Certainly, you know, Championship goalkeepers are being bombarded with, well, like Dan Bentley was at the weekend, bombarded with aerial challenges, and you're playing 50, 55 games a season. It's such a different game to what, you know, you're playing in England if you're doing it abroad. So I do hope that we see more Championship goalkeepers get their chance in the Premier League.
Okay, a goalkeeper that wasn't or isn't and is very much a Premier League goalkeeper is Stefan Ortega, who was brought in by Pep Guardiola. Lots of love from Gary Neville yesterday in their win over Chelsea.
And I thought he was excellent. I thought that, it was a distribution masterclass. You know, we talk about Edison. I think we've seen exactly why Pep Guardiola's got Ortega as his two, because it's very little difference in terms of the quality that you're getting from the back. And I thought his passing was exceptional all day. A couple of good saves in there as well. Certainly the save he made, really odd technique, I would say, that on the one-on-one. It's like he essentially done the splits, but where you might see a David De Gea do a long barrier, or you know, Joe Hart come and jump at feet or whatever it is. You know, every goalkeeper's got a slightly different technique on this. He effectively waited to the point of contact and just did the splits on the four, and it was really effective in that moment. But no, I thought he was excellent all afternoon. I know there's been one or two things said over time, and he's not really had the chance to fully express himself because Edison is so robust, but no, I thought he was brilliant.
We should actually just quickly rewind. It was a good save, a similar save from Jordan Pickford as well, from Mateus Nunez in that game between Wolves and Everton. It was 1-0 at the time, so that was a big save.
Yeah, big save. I thought he, yeah, positioning was good, decided to go with his foot. And again, different goalkeepers, different techniques. Some might look to do a collapse dive on that. But again, he didn't have much reaction time. So I thought he stuck his right foot out, got a toe to it effectively to put it around the post. And as you say, it was a big save. Certainly at the time, and given how the game finished, it was a crucial save.
And to flip back to Ortega, you've mentioned it already with regards to Brentford and Brighton. That's excellent recruitment, isn't it, for Man City?
Look, again, I talk about Brighton and Brentford being, yeah, of course, look, I say that. Of course, City are the best. City are doing it in a different market. That's the difference. You know, there is no player that is above and beyond Man City. Although, again, saying that, you know, I saw a stat the other day about the top 10 transfer fees, and other than Grealish, that was the only one that City had in the top 10. You know, their recruitment, of course, they spend a lot of money, but nowhere near the likes of Man United or Chelsea, as an example. So, yeah, they really have the process nailed. They're doing it at a higher level than the likes of Brentford and Brighton. But again, you know, we'll talk about them briefly. Like, you look at what they've done this season, and okay, Arsenal have fallen away a little bit over the last few games, but City, just the football they play, I mean, it's just chance after chance. You can't help but feel that this will continue for a few years longer.
Kepa was back in for Edouard Mendy in this game too, and Ethan Wadey, an appearance on the bench, which seemed to get some column inches, purely because I think everyone was like, who's Ethan Wadey? So you often see this in various websites. They come out and go, well, this is Ethan Wadey. Who is this young man on the bench for Chelsea? He was in because Joao Felix was out injured, so they drafted him in.
And yeah, great moment for him. You know, I can, obviously very different level, but every goalkeeper remembers their first game when they're in the squad. You know, I remember mine. I was, what was I, 19 or so, and on the bench, Barnsley away, 1-0 defeat from memory. This would have been many, many years ago. But you do, you remember your first game on the bench, because it's that coming out in front of the crowd, warming up, you know, even sat on the bench knowing, okay, any minute I could be called upon. And yeah, to do it for Chelsea is huge.
Are there nerves in the warm-up purely from having to serve and produce for the number one goalkeeper?
Yeah, there are. I think, again, every goalkeeper's different. There was for me, because then it was things like, and it sounds so basic, but putting in a cross. You know, you'll always have one, and goalkeepers can relate to this, where you go to whipping a cross, and the first one, you drag it a bit, and it goes over the bar. You're like, okay, got to get this next one right. And then you don't quite catch it, and the keeper kind of drops short into their, you know, and they catch it at their chest. You're like, oh, come on, I've got to get this next one right. And you end up putting pressure on yourself to just chip the ball into the six-yard box. But yeah, when it's your, you know, first game, there's a crowd there, and you think people are watching. Let's be honest, no one's watching. Like, they're having their coffee, they're chatting away. They're not really watching the goalkeeping warm-up. But of course, when you're a young goalkeeper and it's your first time in front of that sort of a crowd, you really want to nail every volley, every half volley, and then you get your little opportunity at the end when there'll be a bit of a shooting session. You want to make a few saves. So yeah, there's always, well, for me anyway, there certainly was.
Okay, Bournemouth 0, Manchester United 1. Really good save from Neto late on in this one from Bruno Fernandes. But David De Gea is going to take the focus here. Big stops from David Brooks and Kiefer Moore. And we spoke about this last week with Asmir, because he confirmed that he was going to get the Golden Glove, but it could have been shared still at that point. Now it can't be. He's won it outright. He has 17 for now. Could get two more before the season is out. But David De Gea, second time Golden Glove winner.
Congratulations to him. And yeah, look, I know that, and it's been the highs and lows of being a goalkeeper. It's really interesting, because I just think that, again, we probably, because again, we're in the world that we're in, we see a lot of the media reports, you see a lot of the social media, and it really is split. You know, and it can go from one week, need to be replaced, to the next week, as you say, to win Golden Glove. A team that, yeah, have been okay this season. I mean, it's been on the whole, obviously, a positive season. They've had a few tough days, it's fair to say, and David De Gea's had a few tough days. But to win the Golden Glove when you've got the likes of City, Arsenal getting as many points as they have, is a huge, huge achievement. And I thought he was very good in this game, given that, as I mentioned, he's had a couple of tough moments recently. I thought body language looked good. A couple of big saves, as you mentioned. It was a very David De Gea performance, you know, and the saves he made just moved so effortlessly, looked very much like he was in the flow. Big save down left, again, made it look pretty comfortable, good tip over the bar, another save down to his right, and in the end, big saves and a good clean sheet.
Asmir did ask me about this last week as well and said, what did I think about David De Gea? Was his time up at Manchester United? And I said, yes, I thought that his time was up, and it's irked me. My answer has irked me all week.
Has it?
And I think I'm going to backtrack on it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Just because I was thinking about what the priorities might be for Manchester United in the transfer window this summer. And I was also thinking about a comparison, essentially, between risk and reward goalkeepers. So a goalkeeper that does play out from the back. We've spoken about it many times on the podcast. There is that feeling that you'll have a goalkeeper who might give away a couple of goals in a season because of playing out from the back. However, the amount of goals that that goalkeeper creates because of his distribution is worth far more. So it's worth that risk. With David De Gea, I almost feel like now it's similar to that risk versus reward in the sense of the saves that he makes compared to some of the errors that he makes, well, they outweigh the errors. So it's almost like you take David De Gea now and you go, do you know what? He is probably going to make errors leading to goals, which is the official line when it comes to that stat. I think it's 4 or 5 this season, isn't it? Up there with Hugo Lloris. So it's almost like, okay, we've got to accept that that's going to happen. But on the flip side of that, he's going to make some phenomenal saves and do plenty more that's going to win us games.
Yeah. Look, I think that in terms of the amount of shots that United have faced, I believe, you know, it's certainly bearing in mind that he's won the Golden Glove. It's not like he's not faced any shots. We've seen it in years gone by where the Golden Glove winner plays for a team that are so solid, and you can't really remember many world-class saves they've made, yet they've won the Golden Glove. I think, for me, it's more of a... It's not necessarily a question of does he save more than mistakes he makes. I think it's more, and this again, where football's got to the point now, certainly where it's so data-driven, it's more a case of David De Gea compared to other goalkeepers they could bring in. So the other goalkeepers they could bring in, will they offer things in other areas that are more advantageous to Manchester United? Look, I think if they were to replace him, then naturally you are going to lose something. You're going to lose, well, a lot of what we're talking about at the weekend in terms of some of the huge saves he makes and certainly at huge moments, you will lose that. But then, as you said, do what they bring elsewhere. Is that going to be more beneficial for the team as a whole? And I think it's more that, and that is obviously the question at the moment. You know, certainly in terms of David De Gea for United now over the years, and we've said it many, many times, the number of appearances, clean sheets, all the records he's broken. Look, as you said, there are other areas of the team they're going to look to improve. And certainly when it comes to recruitment, what will often happen is they will have a priority list. You know, every player can be changed in any team, even the Man City team. They'll always be looking at the next one. If a player falls off it slightly, they'll be looking to upgrade in that position. Is David De Gea one of the key areas they need to upgrade? Probably not, in my opinion. I know that the manager will have a certain style of play. Does David De Gea fit perfectly? Again, probably not. But it just depends on where he falls on that pecking order, because it will take another year or two, you'd think, for United before they're going to be seriously challenging the likes of a City or Arsenal this season.
And just to elaborate on the save from Kiefer Moore, which was the one-on-one, we were watching that game together. And as that ball was slipped through to Moore, I was saying, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? And obviously he held back and didn't dive at the feet of Kiefer Moore. And you made a good point.
Yeah, well, he doesn't do it. That's not... And again, every goalkeeper's got a different... I mentioned it before with the save we spoke about with Ortega and a very different technique, certainly with Ortega, whereas I think the David De Gea long barrier is something that a lot of goalkeepers, younger goalkeepers in particular, seem to be picking up. So rather than going and really crunching a striker on a 50-50, they'd rather just hold back a touch, be within a yard or so, and know that the barrier they're creating is giving them a very good chance of saving the ball. The benefit of doing that as well is if they do try and touch it around you, you're still on your feet. So in theory, you can still move and try and affect the ball. And similarly, if you do go in and dive at feet and they just get there before you, and there was a good example, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in terms of Aaron Ramsdale. There's a good example this weekend where I don't mind the technique that he's gone with in the Forest game, because ordinarily you get there 50-50, you get enough on it and get the ball away. But of course, sometimes like that, the ball might just bobble over you and go into the goal. So again, it's just different techniques by different goalkeepers in different situations.
Well, we'll touch on that straight away then, because I don't even think there's a case to critique Ramsdale in that moment, because that is surely the spawniest goal of the week from Taiwo Awoniyi.
Yeah, because it's kind of...
and it's this kicked is, against him.
No, no, you certainly, like I say, you cannot blame Ramsdale at all, because I think then go back to the other options. He could have gone and done what David De Gea did or Ortega did and just held off a yard and got close enough. And he might save it doing that technique. But again, this comes back to percentages. You know, if he does that same thing 10 times, he probably saves it 9 times because he did get to the pitch of the ball, and it, effectively all three of them met together, the defender, the striker, and Aaron Ramsdale. And yeah, what's the chances that the ball goes there? It could go anywhere. And it just happened to, I think, ricochet off the striker effectively, didn't it? And it kind of then, and also the fact it's then gone into the ground, it's gone up and gone over Ramsdale. So the actual likelihood of what happened was very, very low. But again, life of a goalkeeper, it sometimes happens.
And a new deal signed for Ramsdale. Length unconfirmed, so keep stum, Richard. But yes, very good news for him.
Yeah, and look, fully deserved. I think that you look at him over the course of the season, certainly, probably goes back to the chat we had in regards to David De Gea, when they've recruited Aaron Ramsdale, there's certain elements that they would have known at the time that maybe had a few tough moments the season before, but them looking with this future planning and someone that can play the way that they're looking to play, you know, certainly in terms of, talk about distribution a lot, but I think on the whole, obviously one or two moments lately that have been highlighted, but on the whole, you know, I think his distribution has been excellent this season. Yeah, so powerful, moves so well. There's so much in Aaron Ramsdale's game to like. So I think for Arsenal, and I'm sure Arsenal fans would be delighted that he did secure his long-term future, because again, going back to a priority list, goalkeeping now for Arsenal will be one of the very lowest priorities. And again, that's huge credit to him, because we say it all the time, there were a few question marks when he signed, but he certainly got rid of those question marks, and he'll be looking for another big season next season.
Comedy dive in this one as well from Keylor Navas. You always like to see those, don't you?
It's like a double dive.
Yeah.
He kind of went and then went again. I do understand why he did this. This wasn't one of those moments where, and I was always guilty of this, where the ball be fired 5 yards wide and I'll do the most extravagant dive, almost because I was taught to dive, you know, and that was it. Whereas I think with this one, the reason he's done the second dive, because he's kind of gone and then gone again, is I think he just wondered whether there was a guy nearby might just get a flick. So he thought, actually, I just need to cover that near post. But yeah, in the end, it effectively did go 5 yards wide, and he's done a full stretch, elaborate dive. I did enjoy it.
A full Pickford, I think that's cool these days. Yeah. Just a couple more bits to finish in the Premier League. A nice save from Sam Johnston to deny Willian. It was 2-1 at the time, and Palace equalised against Fulham, so big save.
Big save. And I love the commentary on this as well. I don't know if you heard the commentary.
Yeah.
It's one that he should make, you know, but he did. I mean, my word, this is a ball fired. You can see it's going in the top corner, moved his feet brilliantly, exploded to his left, top hand, fingertips over the bar. If that's, again, going into the category of should save.
Bit too central, wasn't it, apparently?
Bit too central. Yeah, it wasn't going right in the top corner. I mean, wow. Yeah, brilliant save. I thought this was top. You know, it's certainly... Again, goalkeepers listening in, you'll appreciate this, where shots from distance, not always easy to pick up initially. So you've had to, and it's struck with such force, and it is going right in the near enough top corner. So to move his feet as quickly as he did, and even the technique, you know, I know goalkeepers sometimes use different techniques on this, but his technique was perfect. Angle of dive was bang on, fingertips over the bar, full stretch. I thought it was a fantastic save.
And lastly, Joel Robles with two efforts that were hit into the ground. So just from a technical point of view here, one went in, that was the goal scored by Declan Rice, and one he saved, which was the header that went into the ground that he tipped over the bar. I thought the goal, when you look at it, and this is where someone who isn't completely understanding of goalkeeping might say, well, he could have easily saved that, because I guess if he does just stay upright, he probably collects that shot from Declan Rice, but there's a whole lot more before that moment.
Yeah, well, effectively, moving across the goal, and you've always got a decision to make when the ball's clipped from near post to far post and you're sprinting across your goal, and sometimes you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, in that we've seen it sometimes, and I've had a couple like this, where you sprint it across and throw yourself full stretch, and it just so happens that they head it into that corner and you end up going full stretch and put it around the post, and it goes down as, you know, one of the best saves that anyone's ever seen. Yet, when this something like this happens, the question is then, when he was moving across, could he have got to a point where he just sets for the shot? Because in the end, it almost looks like he's gambled that it's going to go down in that near post area. So I don't know whether he's lost his footing or whether he has gambled to do that. Because if he actually gets across and sets, then yeah, it would be an easy gather. But my guess is that when the ball's coming across, he's thought, well, this is probably going near post. Let me just get myself to the near post and dive to the near post. And of course, in the end, no doubt he'd have been a bit frustrated that it was hit into the ground as it was and went quite central.
And do you want some PSXG?
Go on.
Okay, so was looking at this at the weekend. So the goalkeeper who has, yeah, prevented the most goals regarding PSXG, that particular stat this season so far, with one game, or in some cases two games left to go in the Premier League, is?
It's quite a tough question, this. Who would be the one who would be top of that list? I might go David Raya.
David Raya is third with 4.0. So it's Alisson.
Yeah.
10.6.
Which is crazy. When you think of that and you think of the season they've had and what it could have been without him. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And I would guess, we talk a lot about his, where I think he is, certainly when it comes to one-on-one technique, you know, closing the space, etc. I think he's, well, he is top. And I think because the score you get for that is so high, when it is a one-on-one situation and you do save it, that is very rewarding when it comes to this particular metric. So that does make sense.
I think he was in a new kit at the weekend, Alisson. I liked it. A bit different. And PSXG, I think, is... I mean, we're getting closer, right? This is probably the best metric thus far.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I think that, again, it's very much one area of a goalkeeper's game. But yeah, I say that, and at the same time, if it's not so good, then that is something that teams will look at. And it's one that I agree with a bit more. I think the stats are getting better and better, and the data is getting better and better. There's, I mean, look, the bit that, and it'll take some time, I think, before it's at the level of what it is for the outfield lads. And this is where, you know, goalkeeping experts at clubs, when it comes to recruitment, are still going to be heavily relied upon because, again, it can't look at, you know, a goalkeeper's body language, communication, effectiveness on crosses, distribution, positioning to an extent it does because of, obviously, that will be taken into account when it looks at this particular metric. But yeah, that is one metric that, and again, it sounds like they're refining that all the time as well, because certain scores are given depending on where the shot's taken and the goalkeeper's position and the technique they use. So it's still going to be a few years before we have a few different metrics like this, but that's certainly one that I'm open to.
There are 10 goalkeepers in the green in the Premier League when it comes to PSXG. Do you want to give me the top five? So you've got two, which is Alisson and David Raya. Three more. Who's in second spot?
You see, this is where it's interesting, because you would think, given the number of clean sheets and the number of shots faced, that David De Gea would be top five, but...
In the red.
Is he really? Which is fascinating as well. Okay, who would be the others? I mean, there's so many goalkeepers that have had really, really solid seasons. Oh, I'm going to go...
Sorry, go on.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with one of the Brighton goalkeepers.
No.
Are they not in
the
either?
Both in the red.
Oh, go on then, hit me with the top five.
So, Bernd Leno... Second.
Oh, yeah, I should have got that.
Plus 9.3. You've got Raya, plus 4.0. Kepa, plus 3.7.
Okay, interesting.
And Emi Martinez, plus 3.0. The other five are Jordan Pickford, Nick Pope, Neto, Lucas Fabianski, and Vicente Guaita.
Wow, okay. Dare I ask who's down
the bottom? I decided not to include them.
Okay, let's not do that, actually. Okay, fine.
Into the playoffs we go, Richard. We are going to focus on League Two because they are the most recent games. And we'll start with Stockport 2, Salford 2. Stockport winning on penalties and Ben Hinchcliffe with a few important stops in the game and then two very important stops in the shootout.
Yeah, excellent. I thought both the goalkeepers were excellent on the day. And look, it is a really nice story. And we've had a few recently where just quite motivational, really, when you know, see goalkeepers that... you know, I'll often talk to goalkeepers about their pathway, how they can get to the best possible level. And a lot of the time you put plans in place and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And sometimes it happens out of nowhere. And I know we keep mentioning Jason Steele, but I love that as a story. And similar to Hinchcliffe, you know, I think that this was a big game, massive game. You know, this is where the playoff games are always interesting to me, because it's a platform where a lot of these goalkeepers that are playing, they can have so many more eyes on them than they would in a regular League Two game or even a big cup game, whatever it might be, because of course the season's finished, that we all still want to watch football. The playoff games are always exciting, so it really is a big showcase for these goalkeepers. And I thought that both Alex Cairns and Hinchcliffe on the day were excellent. Even in the penalty shootout, both were excellent. Obviously two massive saves in the penalty shootout itself, obviously done his homework. I thought his strategy on the penalties were good. He looked dominant in the goal, you know, body language. I thought when he did make the dives for the saves, even that, with such a basic thing, but if you're in a penalty shootout, to be full of confidence and to give off that kind of energy, to look as big as you can in the goal, and then when it comes to your actual dive, which the two saves he made, you know, really, it wasn't like they weren't in the corner. You know, both were pretty much in the corner. They weren't terrible penalties, but he's covered the goal so well, looked so strong. And yeah, massive, massive moment for him. Top save from Alex Cairns as well in the game. Flick onto the post. Really agile again, looked really pumped all game. And then I felt for him, because in the penalty shootout, of course, with three of the four not going in from Salford. You know, he did his part, made a great save to his right, and then no chance with a winner.
That's a save of the season contender for me from Alex Cairns there. It was given offside, but we tend to rule offside out when a goalkeeper makes a save like that, especially as that was in the dying embers of extra time.
Oh, it's huge. And that's, again, where we talk about goalkeeper's mentality and we talk about big saves. That's a really good example there for me where, and if you watch his movement, ball's gone to the far post, can't come for the cross, positions himself perfectly, set position is bang on. So again, it's making sure you've got the mentality that in those moments, you're able to produce the big moment. And a lot of that is just being as calm as you can be and just continuing to follow the process and not overthinking it, I guess. And you could see that in the moment. His movement was great, set well, such quick reactions to get a left hand to it. Yeah, I thought it was a top, top save.
Just to go back to Hinchcliffe, you mentioned his story there, which hopefully we'll talk to him soon about. But it is phenomenal. So he played his first games in the EFL in 2007. That was on loan at Tranmere when he was at Preston. He didn't then play again in the EFL until this season. Mm. This season, that whole time after that, he's been in non-league, bar one season when he was at Derby County in the Premier League.
Yeah,
in that infamous 07-08 campaign. But he joined Stockport when they were in the National League North and has risen up through the tiers. Again, it's just amazing.
It's amazing. Well, look, a lot of the conversations I'll have with young goalkeepers at the moment where maybe it hasn't quite worked out at the club that they're at and they're looking for that next step, it's a bit of a cliche, but I'll always say stay as high as you can, as long as you can. And the reason I say that is that for a goalkeeper to drop and come back, of course it does happen, but I'll be honest, 95, 96% of the time, it doesn't happen. Because for a goalkeeper to climb through the leagues, you either need to be with a vehicle like a Stockport that were climbing through the leagues, and you can then, as long as your performance levels are high, then you can ride that vehicle and make your way up the leagues. But to actually get signed by a club in a higher league, unless you time it perfectly and you have a big season, Lawrence Vigra will be a good example this summer. Massive season. He's on a free now. And of course, at that point, you'll then move up. And by the way, Lawrence Vigra, of course, did get promoted with Leyton Orient. So that would have been a natural way to go up a league. But for a goalkeeper to climb the leagues is so much more difficult than a striker who can go and bang in 30 goals one season and they might jump three leagues. Just doesn't happen with goalkeepers. So to hear stories like this, again, I use that word motivational because I think there's a lot of goalkeepers that, for one reason or another, and a lot of the time, you know, sliding doors, it's one of them where it's just purely a case of circumstance as opposed to whether they're good enough, you know, whether they got that opportunity at the right level at the right time, because that's essentially it. There's so many that you see, there's very little difference between some of these lads that are going down to League Two, National League, and some that are maybe playing Championship, you know, and it'd be really, really fine margins. So to hear stories like this where actually you can go down to that kind of level and make your way back up, and look, you know, he's one game away now from potentially being a number one in League One.
Brilliant stuff. To speak about that Derby campaign, just very quickly, do you remember the other goalkeepers that were at Derby that season?
Lewis Price?
Yes.
Who's the other one? I should know this because Lewis Price didn't start the season, did he? And I can't think who it was now. All I remember is Robbie Savage was playing for them at the time.
He was.
I do remember that. Go on, who were the other goalkeepers?
So you had Lewis Price. You had our good friend Stephen Bywater,
of
who took them up, but then went on loan, I think to, I'm going to say Ipswich, he went on loan to. But yeah, then you had Ben, who would have been, I guess, the three, wasn't playing, but was there essentially because of the contact that he had with Billy Davis from his time at Preston. But funnily enough, they also got rid of, I think at the start of the season that year, Lee Camp and Lee Grant.
Really?
So a real goalkeeping merry-go-round it was.
There you go. Lovely bit of trivia.
Let's talk about the other game in the League Two playoffs. Carlisle 3, Bradford 1. Thomas Holy with a big save at 1-0. That was just after Carlisle had taken the lead. And Harry Lewis, just want to question his positioning on what was the winner eventually by Ben Barkley.
Yeah, a couple of moments for Harry Lewis in this one. In that, first and foremost, by the way, I know he's so many plaudits this season. I know it was very tightly run between him and Lawrence Vigory for goalkeeper of the season. But yeah, a couple of moments in this one. So the first one, I'm sure he'd be a little bit frustrated. He wasn't able to hold the one down to his right. And they're really difficult situations, this, where a shot from distance, really tough to gather, really tough to parry into a safe area as well. And you can see he's tried to hold it and then tried to get on the second ball, and he's, yeah, just fine margins again, otherwise he gets on the second ball. So a bit of a frustrating one. But no, I was going to talk more about the cross, because this is one of those situations, and goalkeepers face it all the time, where it's whipped in, it's kind of going towards a far post, and you've got the decision, do you go for the initial ball? In this situation, I think that when he sees the ball whipped in, he doesn't think the striker's going to get a touch on it. So naturally, his initial movement is then towards the ball to then probably scoop it by the point it gets to him. But of course, the lad gets the finest of touches. It was such a small touch, but it was enough to take it back on himself. Look, incredibly agile, Harry Lewis tried to get himself back. But by that point, of course, his positioning wasn't there. I guess the argument would be for this one, as a rule of thumb, is that you follow the flight of the ball, you maintain your position. If it does then veer towards the far post, this might have been going just wide, but it does veer towards the far post. At that point, it's a full stretch dive and you then fingertips round the post, whereas he's probably just made that move a touch too early.
And to finish the analysis, Richard, I would just like to talk about two games that occurred in midweek. So a little late, but I think we should mention it because they were both in Europe. One was the Champions League semi-final between Manchester City and Real Madrid, and two performances and two unbelievable examples of excellent goalkeeping and excellent saves from Edison and Thibaut Courtois, and the Europa League semi-final between Sevilla and Juventus as well. I was able to watch this on the plane, so it was a live feed, and I was wowed by the goalkeeping performances of Bono and Wojciech Szczesny.
Yeah, a couple of huge saves from Wojciech Szczesny. Certainly the second of the two, high up to his right to get it over the bar. And again, both of these have been shot from distance, so there's movement on them. And I go back to the point I made earlier, like it's not always easy to pick them up straight away. Even more so, and again, some goalkeepers will be able to relate with this, in that, you know, packed stadium, under the lights, to pick the ball up from distance and watch the flight, especially when there's very little movement, very little spin on the ball, so not easy to pick up. And both of these were quite similar in that regard. And again, I just thought the speed of movement, athleticism to get himself up to the right in the way he did, and you could sense his reaction to the second one. He knew it was a big save, really, really big save to get himself up there. Really powerful, gets good hands to it, flicks it over the bar. Brilliant save.
Commentary Corner. So this was sent in to us by Ian Longstaff, who said at GK Union on Twitter, please listen to this. The commentators are talking absolute rubbish. Nothing that he could have done. Easy option to blame the goalkeeper. Poor back pass and credit to the player closing him down. So this was the FA Trophy final yesterday between Gateshead and FC Halifax. And Jamie Cook was the goal scorer of the only goal of the game for Halifax, and it was James Montgomery that was in goal that received quite a few pelters from the commentary team.
Yeah, horrific commentating. I really, really hope he gets reprimanded for this or something happens, because like I really hope when I saw the replay that he'd correct himself, but he didn't. I think at that point, I guess there's probably a little bit of embarrassment. Like, he's made the point, he wants to stick to his guns. The co-commentators then semi-backed him up. And then suddenly it's like, oh, he hesitated. No, he didn't. Watch it again. Wait, where's the hesitation? No hesitation. He's even tried. Credit to Montgomery. He's done the safe thing. Terrible back pass. Made it a 50-50. And he's angled his foot to try and put it out for a throw-in. Like, excellent goalkeeping, if I'm honest. He's seen the situation, got there quickly, tried to play it out for a throw-in. So this is 100% the mistake of the defender, who you can see, by the way, straight away, head in hands. Like, he knows he's messed up. And how the commentators have somehow blamed James Montgomery. I'd love to, and this again where we say it all the time, a goalkeeping pundit on the panel. Because then, okay, explain, what can he do differently? You've just been sold short on a back pass, it's a 50-50. He's come out quickly. He's looked to play it safe, out of play. Hasn't tried to go through the player. He's actually even looked to play it out wide. Credit to the striker, where he's managed to just read it and get his foot there to make the block and score the goal. But there is absolutely nothing more James Montgomery can do in this situation, and yet infuriated me. Listen to this.
If we can't get goalkeepers on the panel in the Premier League, it's highly unlikely we're going to get it in the FA Trophy final.
No, and it's highly unlikely he'll commentate above that level, if that's the kind of commentary. But you then feel sorry, because again, look, a lot of people watching this game, and for James Montgomery, you know, people must be looking, people close to him watching it back must be just thinking, come on, like, surely. No, and I'm glad that there's been a bit of backlash to this, because, as I said, you'd have loved it if they'd have just corrected themselves instantly. They didn't. If anything, they compounded it, and they kind of felt like at that point they needed to compound it. But again, for me, if I was to break down what James Montgomery did in that moment, he did absolutely nothing wrong.
Yeah, thank you for that, Ian Longstaff. Of course, if you'd like to get in touch with us like Ian did, haven't done this for a while, have we?
No.
Please do so on Twitter at GK Union, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503673020. But Richard, what does this sound mean?
Of course, that can only mean one thing.
It can only mean one thing. The klaxon has sounded, which means that an assist is about to come. So this was from Alex Runnerson, the Arsenal goalkeeper, of course, who at the moment is on loan at Alanyaspor in the Turkish Super League. So he set up a goal for the second time this season. So he's done this already this season, funnily enough, against the same team, which was Yukatel Kayserispor in the Turkish Super League, as I said. But yes, what an assist. Drilled, found his man, brilliant accuracy.
Yeah, lovely, lovely kick up field. Really, really good kick up field. No, look, it's a great strike.
First time.
Yeah, ball's been played back. Not the easiest one to deal with, and he's caught his sweet. Then the defenders kind of messed up and they've gone in 1-1 and scored. So look, yeah, he's done his part perfectly here.
Okay, and to finish, Richard, one more final quiz question.
Ooh.
Who was the goalkeeper, or who were the two goalkeepers, actually, just to add another layer, in the 2010 World Cup final?
Oh, you see, I'm much better when it comes to Premier League and EFL. Who are the two goalkeepers? Give me one and I might be able to get the other.
Okay, Iker Casillas was in goal for Spain.
I should have known that. Yeah. I should have guessed that because it was that sort of era. Fabian Barthez?
No. Oh, so you don't even know the team?
I don't know the team. No, I don't follow World Cups.
The nation.
Really. England haven't done so well over the years. So I kind of switch off after we go out.
Okay. Well, it was the Spain 1, the Netherlands 0. So famous for the foul, of course, from Nigel de Jong. Howard Webb not sending him off. The winner from Andres Iniesta.
Van der Sar?
In extra time. Nope.
Who was the Holland goalkeeper in 2010?
Okay. Lots of people shouting this at their
No, they will be, and I really should know again.
Right now.
This is an area of expertise. I'm not. Yeah, World Cup finals. I mean, I'm sure you're the type that you could probably name every World Cup final since 1932. Was it the first one? Uruguay. I bet you could probably name the goalkeeper of that World Cup. But no, I'm not great when it comes to a World Cup final. So go on. Who was the Dutch goalkeeper?
Martin Stekelenburg.
Of course it was. Yeah.
Mm. And I mention it because he is going to retire at the age of 40. At the end of this season, Richard. Of course, a big player for Ajax. I hadn't realised that he'd played 70-plus games in the Prem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously Southampton and Fulham. I'd forgotten about Fulham. Mm. And then Everton, of course, where he was a 2/3, I think. But yes, played for Roma in Serie A as well, but retiring, hanging up his gloves at the end of the campaign.
Yeah, well, I think to get to the age of 40 and still playing, I know we've spoke about this a lot, goalkeepers that do get into their 40s. I kind of feel like that's a bit of a thing, isn't it? You're obviously Ben Foster now, 40 years old. Brad Friedel, of course, surpassed that age. And actually, I did talk randomly to Brad Friedel, and this came up in conversation the other day. And, you know, again, given what he did, he's very much the belief. I think the biggest thing is enjoyment. I think when it comes to goalkeeping, of course, you don't need to be as physically fit, etc. Physically fit in terms of like the aerobic fitness, but you still need to have that power and do your gym work, etc. But I think if you do look after yourself, again, it's just further proof. And I know his role this season's obviously not been maybe as busy as it has been in years gone by, which often happens, a transition to a 2, the transition to a 3, etc. But again, it's just further proof that if goalkeepers do look after themselves, there's no reason you can't go on into your 40s.
I know I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you again, because yesterday you mentioned the fact that you were at Fulham. I can't remember why. Why was that? Was someone there at the time?
Yeah, so it was Bettinelli, Marcus Bettinelli and Gabor Kirai that were both there, but both struggling with injuries. And about a month ago, they were in a bit of a relegation battle. So they just brought me in effectively as cover because I was a 3 at Brentford at the time. So it was just one where just in case something happened last few weeks of the season to either of them that I could step in.
But I was Kerbishley. That's who we were talking about, Kerbishley. Yes. He was there at the time. So, again, I think I've asked you this before, but was there not any part of you that just thought, I'll do another year, I'll do another couple of years? Because the option was there.
Yeah. No, I had a chat with the goalkeeper coach. Kit Simons was the manager at the time. Obviously, Kerbishley was there in like I can't think what his role was now, maybe director of football or something like that. But he was certainly a consultant that was helping. And no, I did really enjoy it. Like, I really enjoyed it. I think because my mind was made up in that I was done at that point. And I go back to that. I wasn't maybe as fortunate in terms of being robust with all the, I mean, I broke most bones in my body by that point. So that was certainly the biggest factor, I think. But there was a part of me that thought, do you do that number 3 role for a couple more seasons? Like the day-to-day was still enjoyable. But I think because I'd really made my mind up, I was ready to move into the next chapter, that it wasn't too much of a consideration. But I certainly think that if I was physically fitter at the time, and wasn't, it was my shoulders mainly that I was struggling with, and that really took a lot of the enjoyment out of even training. But I think if I was physically fitter to do that role at the back end of your career, you're seeing so many goalkeepers do it now, and I think on the whole it's a nice role when you've had a good career and you're not necessarily longing to play games desperately. Then it's a great role for a keeper, and it's an important role for a team.
Okay, Richard, this has been great. Lovely setting, lovely place to do a podcast. On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give this pod?
This pod, I see what you've done there. I see what you've done. You brought this back to fish. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? I'm traumatized. I've told you, I've managed to get this off my chest. My nose has healed. You'll be glad to know. I'll show you a picture in a minute because you can see the extent of the injury. But yeah, look, I'm going to get some therapy and I will get through this.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.